Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Oh, hi, everyone, and welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Gio Silanisu from Aurora Solutions. Gio. How are you?
Hey, Saul. How are you? Good, mate. And yourself?
I'm great. Yeah, really good. Very, very excited to have you on today. It's going to be a really interesting chat, I think.
I'm excited to be here, mate. Yeah, you've got me just before I go on a big jaunt.
Yes, a little bit fortuitous. Yeah.
Yes.
Got in contact, and then you were saying what you're doing. I was amazed.
Yeah.
I'm super interested to hear all about it.
Excellent.
So I guess for everybody listening, for people who don't know who you are, could you just give everyone a bit of an overview, the short version of who you are, I guess where you had been and where you're going, in a short overview, but
yes,
so people have a bit of a gist of.
I love it how you're emphasizing short, because you know I don't do anything short, Saul. So anyway.
Well, because the rest of the podcast is going
to be. I'll give you the snippet, mate. Yeah. So as you know, we've known each other for maybe 10 years or so.
Yeah.
I used to run a construction business. I had my own construction business for 14 years. I was the worst boss I've ever had. I worked myself to the bone for 80 hours a week, and I was literally had created a monster that I felt that I couldn't get out of. And I remember having some epiphanies. I saw a guy speak one day, and he told me, you know, he was speaking to the group, and he said that he only worked 1 week a month in his business, and he lived in the Philippines. And I thought, what a great lifestyle. That's never going to happen for me. I remember that. And that was 7.5, 8 years ago that happened, when that guy was speaking to us. But what it did, Saul, I think, was piss me off. And I get pretty motivated when I get a little bit annoyed.
That's great.
And when I get motivated, what I mean by that is I get curious. And so I got curious at that point in time. And well, why can't that happen for me? So then I had a whole journey. I took a couple of groups to Kokoda, and that was very transformative for me. They were rites of passage programs for young men and their fathers to connect them, because I could see there was a need in that. And I'd already started business coaching at this point as a side gig for trade-based businesses and stuff like that. And so I just started to these things sort of fell into my lap, and I ended up in the coaching space. And in 2019, I wound down my construction business after my marriage had failed in 2016. When my marriage failed, I failed. There was physical illness, there was mental, you know, there was emotional, there was all sorts of stuff that occurred for me. And a real regeneration or rejuvenation as to who I am. I had to really sit down and have a good hard look at myself. And so in 2019, I took the decision to wind that business down. It cost me a fortune. You know, it cost me over 300 grand to get out of that business, which I'm still paying that off at this point in my life. But the coaching started to take over. And as a consequence of the dilemma that I got myself into after my marriage had failed, I started working with my mentor, Lorna, and I got into a different style of coaching, basically like a life coaching, leadership coaching aspect to it, where we work with the person within the business, because in all businesses there's a key person usually, right? And that's the owner, might be a couple of owners, might be a relationship. In my instance with my ex-Ange, I mean, we both helped to run that business. So that was a huge toll on the relationship as such. And so at the core of every business, every family are people, there's humans. And so I was teaching people how to do their business better, but they didn't understand who they were. They didn't understand what motivated them. They didn't understand how to create a life that truly fulfilled them. And so through my own journey on that, I was the person doing the work to try and find myself.
You were the test case in a way.
And everything I coach from, Saul, is from a practical experience. So I'm very much, there is nothing that my clients get. I mean, they get the warts and all. So they know all of the difficulties in my life, be it relationship, be it whatever, business, financial. I'm very, very open with all of that. You can ask any of them. And then through that experience, they get to feel and understand their own part in it. You know, how's that apply to my life? And then they start to see a way that they can manage themselves through it. And so I very quickly changed my focus from business coaching to this personal transition leadership coaching. And when you work with the human being inside, then what happens is the business changes. The relationships change. Relationship to self changes first, and then everything else swings from that. And it's transformative, mate. It's beautiful. I get to work with some of the most courageous, vulnerable, successful people. You know, it's interesting. People will think that they have to focus on their business first, whereas actually what we do is focus on the person first. And as a consequence, the business ultimately becomes very successful off the back of it.
Yeah, I guess
it's almost a paradox.
Yeah, I guess for me, like listening to that, there's almost like two things. There's like a very common sense thing that pops into my head straight away, which is that, like you were saying, in many instances, like persons, that they are their business and their business is them, because they're either, and that's not even if they're sole traders, like they work all the time, like you did, like you know, I do. Mm-hmm. And then often it's your passion, it's a way to make your income. But and then the second thing is, I guess, like a bit of a realization that I've been talking to my wife about different, I guess, similar things. You know, when you have things that happen in your business or life, and there's always something or things at the heart of it, like that, at the core, that I've come to a conclusion, which kind of ties into what you're saying about that if you work on those things, other things just seem to kind of fall in place. And you don't realize that until, like, you have to do it and then see it in action for you to actually believe it and go, oh yeah, no, that was easier than I thought, you know, because you're focusing on, you know, on this over here, and you think that's important, as opposed to, you know, like things you touched on, like, you know, just simple things like physical well-being is, you know, is of course, like, you know, like I think everyone knows intuitively, they know that's super important. Like you have to be well rested, and you've got to be in order to be like happier, and then that flows on to everything else. I mean, that seems to be, I mean, it's such a cliche and people talk about it, but it's just one of those like real truths. And
yeah, but how often do we do it?
Yeah, well, that's right.
So there's
that's
a big difference between knowing whether it's the right thing to do and then actually carrying that out and looking after myself. And there's some things that, there are some primary things that block us from doing that, right? There's conditioning and all sorts of stuff. So, you know, if you ask somebody whether they're happy, you know, what's interesting is through this work and over the course of the last 4 years of doing it, most people are chasing the same thing. It's very, very simple. Most people want to just find a bit of joy in their life, not necessarily happiness. Joy is a baseline, which means I can go through difficult things but still be joyful that I've got a business and a family and you know, there's gratitude about it, you know. So joy and a bit of peace, right? Peace. So most people, it's interesting, will never experience true peace. There's a moment where we'll all experience true peace. I've started doing a training course called an end-of-life doula course. So this is for palliative care, and you sit with people and their families whilst they pass. And there's a moment at the passing of a person when they literally leave the body, or, you know, they take their final breath, where there's a moment of peace, quiet and peace for everybody in the room. And it is my observation through that that's what everybody's chasing in their life. Mm. And yet most of us never experience it until the last minute, no, the last moment. So it's interesting what's fed into my work is that I look at that and I go, how do I then bring that into my client, for my clients, so that they can feel peace through their life? How can they create those moments? Won't be for you know, very rarely will we find somebody that will be able to create peace permanently and consistently, but at least moments of those peace, and so that they can have that when they choose, you know.
It's like such an interesting perspective you had on that too, because I guess a lot of people, whilst they would, I'm sure, 100% relate to what you were saying, I would probably also say that a lot of people, if you're talking about somebody's passing, that other very strong emotion that they feel at that point in time, which I've like felt, I'm sort of being at my, I mean, father-in-law at the point where he actually passed to, is like ultimate sadness and like tragedy.
Of course, but grief follows, yeah.
But it's like an interesting observation that then you then tied that into this other thing too. Because when I think about it, that's actually really true, because it's at that actual point, there's like this sort of, I guess, like an emptiness for the people left, but also like the fact that there's this crazy sort of realization that they're actually not there anymore, and there's that sort of moment,
but they've departed the physical body, right? The skin bag, they've left the skin bag behind, is what I call it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and you can see it, like you can, I mean, that's a, I would be wrong in saying that experience that I had didn't, but wasn't like a really significant experience, and almost can't explain it, because it is you see it, like you almost, whilst you don't obviously see the spirit leaving the body, but there's a sense of it, like that, or of the fact of the absence of it, like the absence,
yes,
that it's not
very much so.
It's like visibly not there anymore, even though
There's a philosophy or a theory that I've been watching, a guy called Greg Braden, who's been working on some principles, and he said there's research going into the first organ that's developed in the human embryo is the heart. Yet there's no purpose for the heart, because the fetus is being fed by the mother. So there's no veins, or there's no arterial system, you know, but the heart is there, and then it starts to beat. And what they've been trying to work out is, why does the heart beat? What is the purpose of it? Is it a chemical thing? Is it an electrical thing? And no one can agree as to what it is. No one can really work out what it is. And the only premise that they can get to that makes sense to me, and I don't know whether there's no scientific proof for any of this, but what they're starting to theorize on is that the heart in the fetus starts to beat when the soul enters the fetus, okay? And what you're talking about there is the time where the soul departs it. And I've physically seen a number of people. I saw my dad last year, and he'd already passed for a couple of days before I got to him. And he physically looked different. You could tell he wasn't in the body anymore, if that makes sense. And
you can.
And I've seen a number of people,
absolutely,
that have been on their deathbed, either on, you know, there was one gentleman I knew years ago, Greg, who had passed, and they had him on life support, but he didn't look the same. He didn't look the same at all. So the body was still living, but he had departed. So there's this element of that, not to get too heavy into that, but certainly, you know, it starts to open up questions. You know, what am I here to do? You know, is my business the only thing I'm here to do? The business is a great thing. It's an objective. But sometimes I feel that that's a tug of war with my family. I want to spend more time with my kids, my wife, whatever it happens to be. So there seems to be this little conflicting relationship that we create in our life.
Yeah, most certainly.
And so how do I become at peace with that? How do I get to the point where I can, because there's no balance in life. People go, I want balance in my life. No, you don't. You'd be dead when you've got balance. That's you don't want balance. You know, I say to people, so you don't want up and down, right? So I'll draw on a board an up and down squiggly line. And they go, yeah, sure. So what you want is something like nice and even, nice and flat. So I'll draw that underneath a flat line. And they go, yeah. I said, well, if that was an ECG of your heart, which one would you prefer, the up and down or the flat one? And, of course, everybody picks the up and down. Right?
That's a great one. I like that.
It's beautiful, right?
But it is really true. Like it's true, even though like it's a funny metaphor, but it's a very accurate one.
Mm.
Because life, it's like you don't know. It's the same thing as sort of saying, not in a metaphorical sense, but even in the physical sense, you don't know. You actually don't know what darkness is like, even in like actual dark, unless you have light. If you lived in a world where it was dark all the time, you wouldn't understand the concept of light because that would be your norm. And if it was light all the time, and there was it's only the absence of light, but then it takes on its own sort of either mental or actual form, but really it's the absence of light. Darkness. So like either way, like in my mind anyway, the best thing about life and everything is the ups and downs. I mean, you want less of some than other ones, obviously.
Well, that's only because we judge them all, you know. So
yeah,
what you're talking about there, I think, is we as humans have turned up on this planet to live a life of experience, and that experience is experienced through contrast. So up and down, everything on this human journey that we're on. So we come into this thing called a skin bag with a pinhead on it, you know, and we enter into that, and we have this life, and we have these moments that turn up. And in those moments, some are up and some are down. Now, those ups and downs, so we were talking just before about death and the mourning of process of death. Now, in our culture, we mourn death, but in many cultures, they celebrate it.
True.
So what's the difference? It's just a mindset. It's just a decision that we've made. Now, our decisions have been made through, you know, hundreds of years or even millennia of conditioning. So there's nothing right or wrong about how we feel or how we experience people's death. So I want to be really clear with that. But it's just a decision. It's literally just a decision. So when you talk about, yeah, sure, there's things that I don't like going through. Mm. Well, what's interesting is that the only reason I don't like it is because I've decided I don't like it.
Mm.
So when they've tracked and they've processed the neural pathways of the brain, when we experience excitement and we experience fear, the neural pathway is exactly the same. So when they've got the, you know, they've got the whatever it is, there's the device that tracks that, they can see that the neural pathway, so the actual, you know, electrical impulse that goes through the brain is exactly the same for excitement as it is for fear. So what's the difference? So you and I are sitting on a roller coaster, and you love the roller coaster. So you got the hands up in the air going, bring it on, let's go. And I've got the white knuckles on the bar going, Jesus, get me off this thing, right? What's the difference? It's our decision. It's our perception of what's going on. And so our experience of life, up or down, right, is through our perception. And so what we work on is how do I then see something and perceive it differently, right? So to do that, I've got to undo some conditioning that I've encountered throughout from childhood all the way to the current stage that I'm in. And I have to sit in my emotions. So emotions are a beautiful thing. They're a barometer. And that in the emotional state, I can then start asking questions about how am I thinking right now. It'd be very difficult to understand what you're thinking because you're having 65,000 to 85,000 thoughts a day. And 85% of those are sub or unconscious. So I don't even know what I'm thinking, but my emotions will lead me to this. So if I'm feeling sad, then I can use that sadness to guide me to what my thought process is. Once I understand what my thought process is, then it's a choice to change it. So I can choose a different way of looking at it. And so to give an actual example of that, you know, I mentioned before my dad passed last year, you know, and we had a very difficult relationship, my dad and I. He was very physically abusive when I was a kid and all the rest of it. And that tainted our adult relationship and whatnot. Yet when he passed, for me and subsequent to that, we took his ashes over to Italy last year and took him back to the family plot over there. It was a beautiful healing moment in all of that, a forgiveness moment for the things that I had carried with me for a long time. You know, I mean, he physically stopped flogging me when I was 15 years of age, but up until about the age of 45, so for 30 years, I had continued to make decisions about those things. And obviously they were difficult decisions. I blamed him for it. I did all the rest of it. Now, as soon as I got out of the context of blaming him for those situations and just took responsibility, not blame, but responsibility for the decisions I'd made about him, my life changed and almost instant. And so it didn't change the event, but it changed my experience of the event. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So I don't, you know, I will create events in my life. You know, sometimes I get to create them like I am right now. I'm going on a trip. I'm going overseas. I'm going to walk for 800 kilometers and I'm going to see what turns up. So I pick that, but I'm not going to pick, I'm not creating all of the events that turn up on that thing. I mean, I do at a level that I'm creating it, but those things are going to turn up. It's how I perceive those things that turn up based on my physical state at the time, how tired I am, my mental state, my emotional state, whatever, is that's going to help how I then experience those events when they show up.
Mm.
And yeah. So having a control over that myself inside thoughts, emotions, and actions changes the events that turn up for either being painful, sometimes I judge them to be painful,
yeah.
or blissful.
It's interesting in I guess it's like we all know, like the having hindsight is marvelous because you can often see the wood for the trees, like and you can realize there's this metaphor that I think I can't remember when I had this, it just cropped into my head. It was like years ago when at various points when you have either disagreements or arguments with other people, that like every couple generally does, and this thing that my wife and I have talked about for years, and it's kind of reassuring and accurate at the same time. It's like this idea of a bushfire, that everything, there's always something really good, really good, whether it's a realization or a new way of thinking or some like actual good what I deem to be good, you know, anyway, after the fact, once you get the bushfire out of the way, because like a bushfire, whilst everything is destroyed, the ash and all the nutrients that go into the ground form a great new layer of of on the ground for lovely new growth. It gets rid of all the
regenerative, right?
Yeah, regenerative. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that at whatever point years ago, I was like, that's a good one. I'm going to stick with that one. No, that always seems to resonate very strongly with me because it seems so true so often. Is that you have this.
Well, if you also look at some of the Australian species, plant species, they require the fire to germinate.
That's right.
They require the fire to actually reproduce. Right?
True. Yeah, that's right. So that's the other point too. And kind of that ties into what you were saying before. Like I find it really interesting. You were saying before about like having that the trek itself, like the pilgrimage that you're going on, that the, you know, whilst you will be sort of open to things that happen and then how you actually deal with them, the facility of doing that is the method by which you get to have these different, you know, pathways that you might go down, which is like in its own little way, like a bit of a microcosm for, you know, just life in general, because that's
100%.
You know, and I mean, but like just to touch a little bit on, because I know you've always been had like a really big part of you, your heritage, you know, in sort of Sardinia. So how long has that actually been say a part, like in your life, did you come to some point at which you really wanted to know more, or is it one of those things that's always been there with you, like in
about Sardinia?
And your heritage, and your family and your ancestors.
Yeah. So Dad was the only one of his family that immigrated out to Australia. So all of his family were over there. And Mum was an immigrant as well. She's Dutch. But all of her family were here. So sisters and brothers and my grandparents and whatever, they were here. So I knew the Dutch side of the family and I knew their culture and whatnot because I grew up with it. But from Dad, I would have this. He was passionate about his heritage in Italy and Sardinia in particular, and then Italy as well. And I would hear so much about it, you know. And in 1998, 1999, I lived in the UK with my ex-wife, Angela. And the last part of that, we were pregnant with my first child, Isabella, at the time, and we were on our way home. And so we stopped in Sardinia, and Dad flew over, and we met the whole family. And at this point, I'd been there when I was about 8, you know, so this is my first time over there as an adult. And I remember saying to Angela on that trip, I said, we will end up living here. And I remember it clearly, you know. So that's, you know, nearly 24 years ago, yeah, right? So it was May. And what's really interesting, Saul, is that I will be arriving in Sardinia to live there in May of 2023, which will be almost exactly 24 years after I said what I said.
Wow, okay? Amazing.
And that's not I didn't plan it. It's not like, oh, okay, so we've got it. I didn't plan it that way. That's just the way it sort of worked. Yeah. So I had felt something when I got there. I connected with my relatives over there. I saw a piece of me that I didn't realize it, but was missing. And so for me, there's a very big energy draw to this place. It's just a beautiful, beautiful spot of the earth. The people are just gorgeous. And there's something that continues to draw me back there. And I've been back, I think, 5 times since 99. Mm. And the latest of which was in October when I went back to see whether, you know, this was on. And I was with a partner at the time, and that's since ended. But I'm not stopping this journey, right? So we were looking at maybe the two of us moving over there. Now that's finished and it's just going to be myself, right? And it's very, very interesting. So, yeah, there's been a very heavy energetic draw to go back there. I'd stated it out loud and in the statement, this is where the real resonance to it is. I didn't say I'd like to live here one day. I said we will live here one day, right? It was a very definite statement. Mm. And when we go to create things in our life, and we were talking earlier about, you know, having that conflict within business and life and whatever it happens to be, I didn't set about with a plan on how I was going to live there 24 years ago. I didn't work out each step by step. I mean, we had a family. I built a business. I mean, I didn't, but it's always been there. I've gone back a number of times to visit, to keep connected, but it's always been there. And there's a beautiful... there's a great book, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And one of the cornerstones of that book is whatever the mind can conceive, it will achieve. Now, Muhammad Ali added something to that years later. Muhammad Ali added the heart. So what he said would say was whatever my mind can conceive and my heart believes, then I will achieve it. And what I work on with my clients through this and what's happened for me is that my heart has been drawn to this place since I first went there. Does that make sense? My mind has got no idea how I'm going to get there. But what's happening right now is it's all fallen into place, literally just fallen into place so that I can. And what I mean by literally fallen into place is on the 1st of February, I was sitting there going, you know what? I'm packing up a house of which I was sharing with my ex-partner and Kylie. And I'm going, well, do I go and get a unit now and, you know, look at that, or do I go and do the Camino, you know, and then move to Sardinia? And I'm, you know, oh, there's so much going on. The business is going here really well. And, you know, all of these things have been building over the last 3 years. It's been fantastic. If I really consolidate this year, this will be fantastic for the business, be a fantastic year for the business. So I go, okay, well, let's just work the process. So I went out and I did some open homes, went and had a look at some units. And honestly, Paul, Saul, you couldn't drag me to these things. I was literally, I went and saw 3 of them and I went, I've had enough of that. I don't want to do that. And so I wrote up on a whiteboard, get a unit in Brisbane or go on the Camino. And of course, the Camino sounds pretty bloody exciting, right? So I'm,
that's pretty
good. So what do I got to do that? Well, shit, mate, just pack all your stuff up, sell whatever you don't want, pack all your stuff up and move. So that was the 1st of February I decided that I was going to do it. And I booked the ticket that day. So I decided, and here's about having a dream, right, but then taking action. You have to have an intention and then you have to act. So I booked the ticket right there and then, no getting out of it now. I've just spent $2,300 on a return ticket, and I bought a return, which is really interesting because I'm still in two minds as to the business and all the rest of it. But the cheapest ticket I could have got was $1,800. The $2,300 ticket, which was $500 more, allowed me the option to push the dates out if I wanted to.
Bit of an insurance return policy.
So I've got this insurance policy.
Yeah.
Okay, mate, just go and do the Camino. Walk the Camino, 800 Ks. You'll have plenty of time to meditate and walk and do all the rest of it. You'll get clear along the way, and then maybe you'll go to Sardinia and do all the rest of it. So I'm packing up my stuff. By the 18th of February, which was my birthday, I had totally moved out of this house. So in 18 days, I'd either sold or packed up into a storage shed everything that I own, living out of a suitcase and a backpack right now. I've got to tell you, Saul, you know, that's the other thing I don't do. I don't give myself time to pull out, right? So there's no way that I can pull out of this now. So I've given myself a very tight deadline and I've created everything. I've worked like the clappers to get it all done. And so here I am, I'm going off. But as I'm packing everything up, I'm looking at the stuff that I've got to pack up and I'm going, I've got a beautiful wood-fired pizza oven. I gave it to a mate, you know. Instead of selling, I gave it to a mate. Maybe if I come back, he'll give it back to me. Yeah? I'm not coming back, Saul. As I went through the process of packing everything up, it became very apparent to me, I'm not coming back. And what happened for me, I was walking one day and I just went, mate, you're in Spain. You're literally a skip, you know, a stone's throw away from Sardinia. Just give it a go. Just give it a go. What can, you know, at the very worst, mate, 6 months, 12 months down the track, if you don't like it, it's not, just give it a go. I don't want to get to 72 years of age, Saul, in 20 years' time and go, Jesus, I wish I'd given that a go and didn't do it. I fear regret more than I fear fear.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And then you got that story too. Yeah, the story that.
And then you got the story. 6 months, 12 months, it doesn't matter, does it?
No, that's right. I mean, like the story, it's actually, it's funny, you know, because the more I do these podcasts, there's a recurring theme across many of them.
Mm.
It's really funny. Like the more, and when you do them, especially when you do them closer together, but even so, and a lot of it, even though like some of the podcasts have been specifically about like storytelling and about, you know, because that's like a big part of what we do, like in our industry. Mm. I don't know. It's just like how I think about everything is like that. But that theme of your story, once again, like it's bandied around a lot these days. Like you hear the storytelling sort of services, people creating a brand story, blah, 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 blah. But like it really is. Like it's really like the story, like so much so that I almost feel like you know, that question, which I really like on the Lex Fridman podcast, he always talks about, his one question that he asks always at the end, he was like, so what's life all about? Like, what's the meaning of life? He always asks it to every single person. Mm. And it's really interesting because everyone has a really different answer, but I'm like starting to think like the jury's out. Like I don't have any definitive answer, but if I was to say, like, it's almost like to make your story as interesting as possible. It's almost like because that and that's not that as exciting as possible or as extreme as possible or as crazy as possible. It seems to me like that's a good baseline because it feeds into, for me anyway, like I this is my sort of like working worldview. You know, the sort of, you know, soon to be changed, perhaps, you know, who knows, about stories like that, that the story, the method by which it goes down other paths, you change your mind or you're more committed or you're less committed. Just the story itself is so interesting. Like while you're doing it, upon reflection, looking forward into the future, it's kind of one for me anyway, like it's one of the most exciting, almost the most exciting thing about life. And therefore for me, because that question of like what's the meaning of life is so always sort of tends,
big question.
Yeah, and for me, actually, because it's asked so often by Lex Friedman and I listen to their podcast so often, I've started to kind of change my perspective on that question itself, because everyone, well, not everyone, but a lot of people tend to go towards that, like relating to the universe, like, is there a God, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think that's the right way to look at it at all, because it's so broad and it can mean so many things that at the heart, like it, for me anyway, it has to come to your experience and what you do and how you do it, because that's all you can control anyway. You can't
you're right onto something there. So
you can't control anything else you can influence, but what, you know, if you could do, you know, and without sounding overly cliche, if you can do good by other people, if you can which I think is at the heart of it, like, really, I think, you know, most major religions touch on those core things. And there's obviously something to it. Like, you don't have to be a religious person, I think, to recognize that's very, very important.
I think it's not about religion. I think the question of, you know, what's the meaning of life? I ask two questions to all my clients when we first start. The first question is, who are you as a person? And so we'll investigate that. And quite often, once we get past the roles of being a father, a husband, a brother or sister or whatever it happens to be, they're just roles. They're not who you are. Okay, so now we've opened the whole bag. Now we've got a can of worms. So then the second question I ask, and I specifically ask them in this this order because it's a trick. The second question is, you know, what am I on this planet for? So what's the meaning of life, right? It's very similar. And we will discuss that. And so what we come to, and what I've certainly through my journey on this saw, and what I've taken this to be, is that the second question is here to answer the first one, meaning that the only purpose for me being on this planet is to understand who I am. Now, you mentioned stories before, and one of the things, the word that popped into my mind about stories is it's not about how extreme they are or how exciting they are. It's about how unique they are. See, each individual human being on this planet is totally unique, but what we've got is a commonality of humanity. And so when you express your story in your new unique way, I get to live part of my story through it, if that makes sense. And so what's been really interesting is I've posted on Facebook and LinkedIn my first thoughts about this journey that I'm on, and I posted it, and the amount of people that have rung me, texted me, contacted me, even today I've had three people that I haven't spoken to in years ring me and go, mate, you and I, we're talking about, I'm going through something at the moment, the fact that you're doing, it's just phenomenal, right? They're living, they can see a part of them in my story. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yeah.
So my job as a human being, regardless of my leadership, spiritual coaching, whatever I do, my job as a human being is to live my story. Right? Gandhi said, my life is my message. Jesus said it. Yes, I am the way. Yeah. It's to live my story, not their story, not your story, not everybody else's conditioned, what they think you should do and what society says you should do. And that's not to say I'm going to live an illegal life or anything like that. I'm going to live my life in a way that draws me. Now, to do that, Saul, that's a tough gig, right? Because I have to overcome my conditioning, which says that I'm not good enough to do it, that I'm not worthy enough to do it, you know, I have to almost, the connotation must be to be selfish in doing that. And here's the point. When you live your life, it feeds everybody else. They become inspired. So is it selfish to inspire others? I wouldn't think so. So there's this whole thing. I just finished watching the Jessica Watson True Spirit story on Netflix, and there's a moment in there. She's in the Indian Ocean. There's no wind. I don't want to give too much of the movie away for those that haven't watched it, but watch it. It's fantastic. And she's bobbing around for 9 days or something like that. There's no wind, right? So she's in her head doing her head in. She's 16. I mean, incredibly brave young woman.
She was lost at sea, was she?
She was on her, she did a round the world trip and she'd gotten into the Indian Ocean and the wind had stopped.
Yes, yes.
And the wind had stopped and she's sitting there. And of course, she can't assist it. She can't put the motor on because it's all got to be unassisted, right? So she's just sitting there for 9 days, no wind whatsoever. It's like a mill pond. And she says this beautiful quote. And I remember watching it and I had tears running down my face because I really get it. Because I'm in the moment. I've just made the decision. Literally, I watched this movie 3 days after buying the ticket. And I watched the movie and she says, it's really hard to live to your dream. And I think about that young woman who left her family on the dock in Sydney and then set out by herself in a bathtub all the way around Australia, you know, the world. Went past the five capes to get there and to do that for 209 days, I think it was, she was at sea, to become the youngest person to ever circumnavigate the world. Holy mackerel, man, that's tough. That's tough. Yet what she's gained from it as a human being, what she knows about herself, most people will never get to in one lifetime, and she got it by 16 because she lived, and it nearly killed her. You know, there was all sorts of stuff that went on. And so, Saul, I think for mine, our story is unique. So live the story. Live your story. And inside of, and here's what I would say to you, you know, if I was coaching at this point, what I would say is if there is conflict about something that you're doing within your business, so I'm living a life in my business, this is my story, 80 hours a week. And I'd set this up. I've learned how to work really hard. I was pretty smart. We had a successful construction business, you know, but I had built a monster and it was killing me. Literally, it was killing me. I mean, you can't do 80 hours a week for 14 years and not have it have physical, mental, and emotional effects on you. It killed my marriage, right? So you can see that. So there's the conflict. So you can see that things aren't gelling, yes? My head and my heart are not aligned at this point. My head, very strong. And it's driving me to this goal of whatever the successful business looks like and the successful marriage looks like and the successful family man and community man and all the rest of it. But my heart is not, it's going, what are you doing, man? You're killing yourself, right? And it took nearly killing myself to get to a point where I went, hold on a second, I've got to stop. And when I stopped, I had to go through a whole host of things first, but I started to recover. And I went, well, I don't want to do this anymore. Now, leaving that business was incredibly difficult. It was like, you know, it's very difficult because I loved that business. It was my heart and soul. I put so much time and effort into it. But by the time I decided to leave it, my heart wasn't in it anymore. And I've always been a person that is follow your heart. And so I leave the business and then this coaching opportunity, which had been there for about 6 or 7 years anyway, was taking off and it started to fill the space and I just felt good doing it. This is the big key that I talk to clients all the time. If you don't feel good doing the thing that you're doing in your business, then don't do it. Get somebody else to do it. Get something else to do it.
How similar, just on that subject, how similar do you think, like obviously in its own different way, was the benefits that you got personally, say, from helping people, being a builder, see their home come to fruition, see them, you know, with great joy, everything that you were able to help them with. How similar, say, on that level, do you think that was to helping people as a coach?
The journeys are quite parallel in a lot of ways because they're very difficult. You know, doing what we used to do on high-end renovations and stuff like that, you take somebody's home, you gut it and literally turn it into a shell, which causes its own anxiety for the clients, right? Yes. You know, here's this million-dollar asset that I've got that's literally been turned into a shell and then hopefully this guy is good enough to get it to a place and finish it and do all the rest of it. Right, yeah. So that brings anxiety into the whole thing and now they're paying two mortgages, you know, a mortgage and a rent, and there's all sorts of stress and whatever.
Yeah.
So there's a very similar thing. It's very difficult. And, of course, out of the fire comes the growth. And by the time you finished it, everybody, you know, I got a message from a gentleman that I did a house over at Turinga, and he's now living in Paris, and he saw my LinkedIn post, and he said, mate, that beautiful home that you created for us, well, you know, it took $1.3 million to create that home on top of what they'd already bought it for. And a long time to recreate it, you know, to renovate it and do all the rest of it. So in that sense, that's exactly what we do with the human. We have to strip it bare. We have to get clear as to who I am as a human being. So I've got to get back to the bones, and then I've got to rebuild it in where my heart, my head is aligned. And to do that, people talk about gut instinct and stuff like that. It's a very subtle voice that talks to us through our gut. And I reckon the gut is the expression of the soul, right? So the soul is, you know, whenever you talk to a religious person in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit is in the middle. It's down here, and that's the soul, yeah? And so we all recognize that there is a soul. I don't know what it is, but blah, 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 blah. When it starts to talk, it's very subtle. It's a quiet voice, whereas when my head is talking, it's yelling. Mm. It's loud. So my first job is to quieten that loud voice so I can hear the subtle one. And I call it's like tuning an old analog radio. And then we hear the speaking. So I've got to tune into it, and I've got to really get connected to it. And then when I do that, I've got to have the discipline and the courage to follow it. Because the head then starts going, nah, man, don't you sell all your shit. Then get on a plane and go and do 2 months of the Camino. You know. No, you haven't trained enough, my friend. You haven't done enough training, and you haven't done this. And, oh, mate, how much, what, you know, all of this sort of stuff comes into your head, right? And so for me now, when that turns up, I was walking at St. Lucia near the university, and it's beautiful, Saul, because this starts coming down. I'm walking, and it's a good, I process a lot. I think and process when I'm walking. It's a beautiful mechanism for me. And I can hear the thought, the fear thought starting to come down the tunnel into my head. And I can hear him chattering away, you know, oh, mate, what about if you lose some clients? What about it? And I literally, I had my earbuds on. I was listening to music at the same time. And I put my hand up and I went, stop it. And I said it out loud, right? And of course, the walking paths around University of Queensland are populated with a lot of people. All the people around me, they are looking at me thinking I'm on some sort of nut job, right?
Fantastic.
But I do that because physically what happened is those voices stopped. It's a physical break, and I don't care what anybody thinks about me while I'm walking down the UQ. No one really knows me. I don't really care. But I went stop it because it's more important for me to stop those thoughts entering my mind and residing there, taking up camp, than it is to what they think, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I stopped it. And then as I'm walking, then the subtle voice started to talk. And it was going, mate, you've always wanted to do it. You know, have you ever thought about doing leadership retreats in Sardinia? I think people would like to do that. It's only 56 euro to fly from London to Sardinia, Gianni. You know, very specific. All of these. Yes, very, very specific.
Very right? specific. Thanks, boys.
And I'm starting to, and so what's happening now, so without a real plan to anything, I'm starting to see a way on how I can create my life in Sardinia. Does that make sense?
Mm. Yeah, the path in that story is like I don't know whether you've done this, but like if you're like reading a book or like a you know actual written story, yeah, there's all sorts of things based on other stories you've done, like how you view things. Like you're reading a story and you're like, I wonder what's going to happen down this path, or we can go down this. And even sometimes when you know the story, like I know the movie and love the story of Dune, but I've never read the books. And I'm actually just reading for the first time. So I know the story, but even when that's the case, and I know generally what's going to happen, there's still always that natural sort of human curiosity, or even when you know, it's like, oh, what? And maybe this is just me, I don't know, because I always go down sometimes to my benefit, sometimes maybe not to my benefit in terms of productivity. When I'm doing work, I very tangential down multiple paths at once, and I got to go do just like pull it back in, like the squid, it's going everywhere. But sometimes it's great. I was like, oh, there's this option, went down, this could happen. And then we go, that would be interesting. Or like, whatever, you know, and then, but, you know, that's, but then those opportunities, like you were saying with that voice, then saying, well, you could maybe do this, like those other paths, sometimes, lead to, you know, unexpected, incredible things that you could never actually come across. It's like
conceive some of the things, yeah.
One of the best lessons that both my wife and I both reflect upon, that was like a very early lesson when we went to the Queensland College of Art, and we, I think it was first year, our instructor, a couple of instructors made us do these exercises, these visual exercises that were just really arduous, but they were some of the best exercises you could do being a designer, but also mentally, which were you would have to do say like 100 drawings within a pretty short amount of time of like a pair, like something really simple, like 100 drawings, but you had to do them really quickly. You had to do them really fast, and you had to do them all differently, all slightly differently. But you only had it, you couldn't really process it, you couldn't really think about it. You couldn't like sit back in your chair and like, how will I interpret this pair? Or how will I interpret this thing? You just had to draw. You just had to like do it. It's like in sport. You're just like doing it in real time. It's like sort of sport version of art. You just had to draw them. And you'd end up coming up with these things that you would never be able to engineer if you actually had the time to think about it. And that's, I mean, that's always, I've always had this very strong correlation between design and art and sport. I don't know why, but it flows into martial arts too. But like I love the, I guess there's an element of the thrill of having to perform in real time and be creative at the same time. There's something about that that I love doing. Like it sort of brings together this sort of challenge and creativity. And if you can pull it off, and then that sometimes goes into the happy accident, which is what I was referring to before. Like, say, like 80 to 90% of the drawings wouldn't be very good, or they'd be okay. But then there'd be this little bit that would be, wow, they're really good. I would never have done that if I'd tried to think about it. It wouldn't have happened. It was because I went down this other path, and I could only go down that other path because I had lots of paths. Like I couldn't go down that path willingly because I didn't know it was there, because I didn't, you know, it's like going to like the crossing and you go left or right. That was like, you could go left, right, and like 360 degree, there's like streets everywhere. You could go down any of them, and you got to have like enough, I guess, faith that one of them's going to be, or more than one will be, lead you to something unexpected that's going to be like the happy accident. But then you just got to do it. I mean, like you're not going to know. You can either go, no, that's too risky, that's too time consuming. I can't.
Which
do
is
that.
Just thought. That's just ego. That's just, you know, look at all the things you've got to give up. This is, you know, all that sort of stuff, right?
But the evidence shows that that works. But then you have to have, like in that circumstance, like that exercise, then upon, like in retrospect, I now know that the reason why our instructors did those exercises, and I would say it's probably the same reasoning why in martial arts you do like countless drills for the same amount of time, so that you get, initially the initial thing is to get past your ego of that you think you're good, or you think you're wherever, like over here somewhere, but you, in order to break that down, you have to do these other exercises to realize it, because you can't intellectualize it yourself. You can't reason it yourself, because it just won't happen unless you're...
And with the repetition, you build your instinct for it, right? And so therefore, when you then get into the you know, the competition of a martial arts competition or whatever, and an opportunity presents itself, instinctively you'll know how to respond to it because of the discipline you put into that, right?
Yeah.
So you'll then, it's not about, you're not consciously choosing in these moments. You will literally, you've already developed your intuition around it, you know?
Yeah. I remember one time years ago, our head instructor, Russell MacArthur, is like a bit of a, like he's a really great sort of straight talking sort of Aussie guy. And I remember him, it was like four, whatever it was, a trade and bow, maybe even black belt, like some really important grading. And he was just like, he saw me and maybe Jill, or maybe just me, like obsessively before the grading, like on grading day, outside doing my drills, like just like practicing over and over again. It was like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm practicing, you know, for my grading. And he was like, you should know by now. And I was like, oh, man. Felt like a real, and it was like, it was just so simple. It was like, if you don't know by now, you're in real trouble. So
yeah, that's right. If you don't know by now, you're not even in a position to be going for the grading. That's like,
why are you here? Why are you here for your first hand grading? I let you come for your grading because you know what you're doing. Like, not that on the day you would just be like right at the edge of like just getting it right, and then like you're just in time. I was like,
And in that moment, Saul, where you're practicing, you're actually saying to the sensei who's picked you to go and do the first hand grading that he doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah. And and also the physical, like from the physical side, then of like further observation on reflection in the future, I'd always observed, and Jill and I had both observed when we'd gone to gradings, the best gradings we ever did, the best gradings, the most relaxed, the best performing, the most fluid, the most everything was when, and this also goes for squash too, it's like going into something, actually not practicing, which has really got nothing to do with the physical practice. It's got to do with the mental anguish of like, got to get this right, got to get this right.
Fear.
You know, of fear of going in to do some activity and just being like happy doing it, happy to be there. I already know my stuff. Just have the faith that I'm here because I already know it. Like I don't not know it. And now I just have to do it on the day. And I love doing it. So I'm just going to do it. And then it's always
there's a level I work with our clients, or where there's thinking, right? So that's the base level. Most people can think, you know, so much so that they think too much. There's faith, and then there's knowing, and so that and thinking, the first one, thinking is linked to hope. So if I hope for something, the opposite to hope is despair. So if I'm hoping that I'm going to do well at my first hand leads to despair, right? Because that's the ego mind getting into there going, I don't know if you're good enough. I hope you're good enough. I hope that. And so what happens is I'm waiting for an external stimulus to give me or deliver to me what I need. And if it doesn't turn up the way I expect it, then despair turns up. Faith is the next level. And we write songs about faith. We do movies about faith, and it's very powerful, but it's still requiring me to have faith, unless I turn it on the internal, of an external thing. So a lot of people's faith in God, the universe, whatever it happens to be, faith in our government that'll do the right thing through COVID lockdowns, whatever it is, right? But if they don't meet our expectation, then again, what we get is despair. So whilst it's a much higher level than just hope, right? And we like hope, hope's inspirational, right? Then it's still required on an internal knowing. On the other hand, there's a knowing inside each one of us. And the way I get clients to center to this is this: there's not a single thing that you've created in your life that you haven't gotten through. Not a single thing. It's the only area in your life that you've got a 100% pass mark on. Now, you might not have gotten the results that you wanted or expected or whatever it happened to be, but you got through it. And the reason I know that is because we're having a conversation here. The one time that you don't get through it, you'll be dead. So with a 100% pass mark in this, why would I ever doubt myself that I could get through anything?
Yeah, very true.
It doesn't make sense. So my knowing, when I centered to that and I say that to clients, they all say the same thing. Yeah, that's true. I get it. So your greatest ability is to get yourself into the shit and then get yourself out of it. No matter how it happens, you always... Now, the judgment that comes, oh, that was painful, or I didn't like the way that happened, or it hurt somebody, whatever it happens to be, that's just ego, more ego, right? But my knowing is that I've gone through these experiences for a reason, and it goes back to those two questions. Why I'm on this planet is to go through the experience so that I can know myself better. And the beautiful thing about knowing myself and getting to know myself is that that is perpetual until the moment I take my last breath. So people love a challenge. Humans love a challenge. So I say to clients, particularly extreme, you know, I've got guys that jump out of planes and balloons and all sorts of extreme stuff that they do. Okay, you want a challenge. I said, you could climb Everest. If you could physically climb Everest in, you know, 15 times in 3 weeks, the challenge of knowing and loving yourself is way bigger than that. It will never stop. You will be presented with challenges every single day that will draw you away from loving yourself, right? And loving yourself, the Dalai Lama's got a beautiful beautiful quote in this. Love is the absence of judgment. To love myself, to know myself truly, I have to stop judging myself, okay? And if I can manage that even for a moment, then I get that peace that we were talking about at death.
Mm.
And so my job now and this whole pilgrimage that I'm on is to explore that at a hyper, I've blown it right up here. So let's really dive into the deep end. So one of my big things is integrity. So I say to people, you create anything you want in your life. Well, okay, mate, good on you, dickhead. Go and do it. Right. So I go, okay, so what am I going to do? I'm going to blow my life up here in Australia. Business is going really well. I've already lost 4 clients just by making the decision. That's okay. You lose the 4 clients. Should I start to rejig my spreadsheets? Leave the spreadsheets, mate. Just leave it all alone and go for a bloody walk. You'll survive it. You've got enough money. You'll do what you need to do, right? And then see what turns up. And the knowing then gets to a place where I just start to go turn lefty because something here told me to turn left. Having no itinerary whatsoever other than I'm going to walk the Camino and it'll unfold in front of me, right? Is the metaphor for life.
Mm-hmm.
When you were born, you didn't sit down and get out a pen, you know, at 3 years of age and go, okay, let's map it out from here to death, right? We didn't do that. We didn't care. As a child, what we did was we engaged in the world in such a way of wonder that we just wanted to experience it. And we would do things like stick a hand on a bloody hot plate and burn. And go, oh, that was an experience.
Just touch and then we, you know. Smack it, shout at it, talk to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'd do all sorts of bits and pieces, but we didn't judge ourselves as part of it. But before our 7th birthday, we were starting to learn how to, but, you know, you hold a newborn baby. That newborn baby isn't looking up at its parents and going, Jesus, this one needs a bit of work. You know, it's not looking at mum and dad going, oh, I hope they sort their crap out before I'm a bloody teenager.
Yeah.
Because it can't. It's got no prefrontal cortex. It develops that over the first 10 years of life. And so, therefore, what you're experiencing right now with a baby, which is why the most hardened men melt in front of newborn babies, is unconditional love because it has no judgment capacity. And all it does is sit there. And what's interesting, Saul, is it does nothing. The child does nothing, and yet all of its needs are taken care of.
Mm.
Yeah? If I can get back to that state before I die, Saul, now that's a journey. Interesting lesson there, isn't
it? Yeah, it's an interesting,
yeah.
Interesting lesson there, I think. That's a fantastic point. Actually, I just had a little, not exactly a epiphany, but it's funny because, things that the baby, because of its nature and everybody wanting to care for it, or all the different reasons that they want to care for it, that then it doesn't have to do all the things that everybody else has to do.
It doesn't have to do anything. It just has to be. We're human beings, not human doings, and we've turned ourselves into human doings. And that's me 80 hours a week, mate, running a construction business for 14 years. I thought that my value to this planet was what I did, and it isn't what I did. It's who I was, who I am.
Mm.
And then I can go and do plenty of stuff, don't get me wrong, but I never want to lose focus of who I am while I'm doing it.
Mm.
I've done that. It hurt. It hurt a lot. It caused a marriage breakdown. It caused the breakdown of my business. It caused the breakdown of me. I never want to forget who I am anymore.
Mm.
So to say that I don't periodically, but I never want to do that. I want to, as soon as I feel any disturbance, any discomfort, any trauma, I realize that I'm not being who I'm meant to be. Which is just a loving, passionate, you know, engaged human being. And then I'll go and do whatever, you know. But that's the point to it, yeah.
What do you think about the idea of a process of rebuilding yourself, like through these different stories and different experiences? I'm saying this because this thing popped into my head that my wife told me years ago. It's always kind of stuck with me about, I think there are shamans in an Indian culture that have a part of their rite of passage for, of their ceremonial rite of passage for young boys was for them, real and or metaphorical, or the point in between where those exist for a lot of tribal cultures where it's not either. It's not like Western culture having to go, it's either real or it's not. And for them, it's actually both. But the process was of them essentially disintegrating the person completely, destroying and then rebuilding their bones out of metal, that their bones are actually remade out of metal and they get a new skeleton. And it's kind of, and it was, and that visual image, like whether it's because I'm a sort of a artist designery type person, that visual image for me is always like, wow, that's amazing. It's just this idea of like rebuilding you up from the ground up. Cause I know, like, I'm sure, I mean, most people relate to this, some more than others, at points where you feel like you've been disintegrated and through some process that you go through, like a bushfire or sort of whatever, you completely gone almost. And then you like sort of find this new, like you get built from the ground up. But that visual image for me, I thought, man, that's really spot on. That's like really, it seemed to be like, it was obviously like a ceremonial part.
It's definitely, I mean, all in, you know, we've, in our culture, Saul, we're very fortunate to be very wealthy in Australia. And I know it sometimes doesn't feel that way, but we are. We're literally now, per capita, the wealthiest people on the planet, all right? So per head of adult in Australia, the average wealth for an Australian adult is $409,000. It's now the wealthiest of anybody in the world, okay? So we've done that in 230-odd years. That's remarkable. I mean, what we've done in this country in 230 years, no one else has been able to do, okay? What I see is that people are chasing comfort, yeah? But we didn't do that in 230 years with comfort. It took a lot of hard work and a lot of effort and all the rest of it. And the Australian spirit is backs against the wall and rising above where you think your station is life and to out, you know, to overcome and over to outperform, to punch well above our weight in circumstances where we shouldn't. So we require those moments of fire and those tests and all the rest of it. So I have a very simple saying, and I live true to this. I've sometimes asked myself, do I need to be fully into this? But this is the saying: I am most comfortable when I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right? Because once I'm uncomfortable, once I'm outside of my comfort zone, then I know that growth is coming. It has to, because in my comfort zone, I know everything. I kind of know all the results that are going to happen. The problem with that is I can become absolutely mind-numbingly bored, stupid in that. And you see it in marriages and you see it in businesses and all the rest of it. Businesses lose their creativity because they just want to follow the same bloody program every single day. And yet they miss all of the opportunities of, you know, sustained growth, you know, residual incomes, all sorts of things that are going on for businesses because we just got to get the process right. And I liken this to watching two different football teams, a really well-drilled football team that knows that if it runs the ball left and then runs the ball right and does all the rest of it and punches up the middle over a six-tackle thing or whatever it happens to be, then, you know, if I do that 85% of the time, then we're going to win some games, yeah? Or you get the team that have got these creative guys that play heads-up footy and you just don't know where they're going to be at any time. They'll pop up and they'll do this and they'll just respond to gaps and they'll just know what time. And the second one is far more elegant and beautiful to watch, because it's instinctive. And we follow those teams far more than we do with the regimented, you know, bang, bang, bang. So in tennis circumstances, you know, you got your three greats, Nadal, Federer, and Djokovic.
Mm.
And the knock on Djokovic, and I think he's fantastic. And in fact, because of this last win, he's actually had to take something out of the other two's book. He's been a fairly regimented player, yeah?
Mm.
Coached by Ivan Leonard, one of the most regimented players ever to hit the tour, right? So very good at hitting his marks. In this last one, he had to change his game so that he could manage his body in it. And he changed the way he played. That's taking something out of it. But you watch a Federer, was elegant. You watch Nadal; they're just beautiful to watch on the court. I mean, Federer was 40 or something, still playing, and he's still sliding around the place and just hitting balls. And you just—it's a pleasure to watch them, yeah. And they got to a point where they just back themselves that they know they're not going to lose.
Yeah, but that's what I was like saying before. I think that touches exactly on why I've always found this very strong correlation between an art and design and sport.
Yeah.
Like they're all like very much the same. Like I was at squash last night and I think it's just something generally to do with the art of movement and somewhere between, you know, the sort of regimented nature of getting good at something through, you know, diligent, super repetitive practice of the same thing over and over and over and over again, which you just need to do. And then you sort of hit a point where after that, there's a certain realization about certain things that you almost can't put into words. It's like when I used to teach martial arts then too. And when I used to use this story because it really rang true for me, it's like when people would always say, like there's certain things in Taekwondo, for example, and certain things that people always just mentally go, well, I don't think I could ever do like a turning spinning hook kick. Like that's, and I was like, dude, trust me, you will be able to do it. And I was like, I know why. It's because I remember the day specifically, that actual day, that actual time where I was like, whatever it was, like a blue belt. And I was like, said exactly the same thing. And struggle, and my instructor at the time was going, you know, you break it down, you turn, then you do this, and you put your knee up, and you turn around and spin. Then one day, I just did it a little bit faster, and I did it, and it felt like I had done it my whole life. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that. I said, trust me, because it happens to just about everyone. Some people take ages to do it. Some people do it really early, but you'll do it at some point and and you just have to trust the process of what we're doing every day repetitively.
And trust yourself in the process.
Yeah.
Or, you know, once I understand
that it's frustrating.
I've put myself for 100%.
Yeah. Like you know that, you know, and yeah. And you've obviously like you've done the other treks before. So, you know, the deal. You know about.
I've never done anything that's 100 Ks, mate. The longest one's 100, and that was Kokoda, and that was tough. I mean, it was physically and this is a longer grind but the point to that, Saul, is this: I know how to manage myself differently now. I know how to manage myself emotionally and mentally, which I didn't have when I was doing Kokoda. I know how to manage my physicality, you know, so. I've got no deadlines. You know, it takes 33 stages to finish this 800 K. So there are about 22 to 24 Ks or 25 Ks a day. I won't be doing it in 33 days. I can tell you that right now. You know, I'll take 2 months to do this because it's not a race for me. In fact, it's about the process of it. And I know how to, you know, I had some issues with my back this morning and sciatic and whatever. So I did some yoga and what actually released it was I haven't meditated in over a week because I've been a bit crook. And I meditated and that's what released it. So it's a combination of a number of things that helped me to keep my physicality in a space that can do what I need to do. And I had tensed up, you know, because of the illness and all of the rest of it, right?
Mm.
So understand when you practice your disciplines, which is the practice of your, of your martial arts, whatever it happens to be. And then I get into the point where I need it. I just know that it's going to happen. Federer and Nadal and all that practice like hell, you know, before they go to a tournament. And but in the tournament, they don't worry about that. They just know it's going to turn up, you know. And they also, they get so masterful of this. They know how to shape where the other person's going to be so that they can go and hit a cross court three shots before they've actually hit the. So they start to see the future, you know what I mean? And the, you know, so those are metaphors. How do I do that in business is to understand that every single moment in business or in my family life or whatever it happens to be has led me to this point so that I can draw upon those moments so that I can then make the next decision and then the next decision and just take the next step. I don't need to know the five-year plan on how to get to this, 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 and this. Business culture will tell you that that's what you need. You need a business plan. I have yet to find someone put a business plan together and after the 5 years go, yep, that went exactly to plan. I was a project manager by trade, right? I ran, you know, 38 homes with 200 guys a day on site and not once did one day ever turn up the way that we had scheduled it. Not once. So what's the point? Okay, have an overall plan because we want a direction and all the rest of it. But if I'm struck, if I get caught up in making today work the way we've planned it, then I'm going to have a pretty shit day, you know. But if I'm open to go, okay, so this is what we've got planned for today, and then I'm open to respond to everything that turns up in my day, then this becomes a challenge.
Is it more of a framework, really? Because, I mean, that's a I very much relate to that. It's exactly the same in most, really, the 99% of projects from websites to branding to anything. There's always, outside of just things that happen within the project, there's people's lives. Like people have things happen to them which you aren't privy to. Sometimes you are, and
which is the most important thing to be conscious to, right? Because I have people tell me that they're business to business businesses. I go, okay, so you don't deal with any humans, and they go, oh, no, of course I deal with humans. I said, you're not a business to business. You're a people. Everybody's in the people business. And I think it's the misconception of that. And then because what happens is to deal with people, it's messy because people have got crap going on in them. I mean, we've just gone through 3 years of lockdowns and insecurity and all the rest of it, and people think we're out the other end. We haven't even started yet. There are people that are sitting there going, what the hell do I do with the rest of my life because I'm not happy with where I'm at? That's what the 3 years brought up with them. For others, they're just scared shitless that they're going to lock us down again or something else is going to turn up and it's going to affect their livelihoods. There's others that are sitting there still worried about the effects of a disease or whatever. There's so much panic and fear in the world. Yeah. And we just listen to the news. They just love amplifying all that. And I believe that all of that's turned up so that we can find some inner wisdom, some inner voice, because I don't need to listen. I don't listen to the news. I don't watch it. I don't listen to it. I don't go anywhere near it. I haven't done since 2011.
Same, yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting because people go, oh, didn't you see this? No, I didn't. And you know what? And I remember a guy at a party going, how could you not watch the news? And I go, well, one, you just told me about it, so now I'm aware. Two, that happened a week and a half ago, and my life is so much better for not having stressed about it, because I can see how much stress is on your face for the week and a half after watching it. So it's also my choice as to whether I stress. So I get to get conscious to who I am, what's important to me, and, of course, knowing some current affairs and all the rest of it is important, but I always find out. All the big events, mate, you always work them out. Somebody tells you something, you'll hear it, somebody talking at the shop, whatever it happens
to be. Yeah, it puts up on YouTube. Yeah, it comes up right in front of you.
So I don't need to worry about that stuff, but I want to be present so that the humans that I interact with, whether it be in my business, whether it be in my family, whether it be friends, whether it be my clients, whatever, get the best version of me that I can present on any given day. That's not the best version that I've ever presented. It's the best version that I can present on any given day, because every day is a fluctuation. Some days I'm at the top of my game. Some days I'm halfway. Some days I'm having a really crappy day. And my job is to communicate with my clients so that they're aware of that, right? And I want to also hold space for those people, whether it be my staff, whether it be my clients, whether it be my family, so that they can have their top day, their middle day, and their crappy day. because all of us are going through something. And if I can hold space for them and help them with theirs, then the same will come back to me because we just reciprocate. Energy flows. And then humanity and this existence that we have becomes more pleasant. It doesn't remove difficult circumstances. It just becomes more joyful because I can share that experience with you. I can be connected to you. I can help you and you can help me. And we become, you know, they talk about the brotherhood of man. We become connected and less judgmental. And that's a lot more peaceful and joyful. Yeah.
You hear those powerful stories. I was reminded of one the other day was something that I was watching on YouTube about those various stories in different world wars. I think this was in World War II where World War One, where the Germans and the British crossed over from the trenches to have to spend like Christmas together. You know, which I think is like even more remarkable considering what they were doing just before that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they were people on the street that generally didn't like the color of each other's skin or anything, and they didn't, and they weren't actually warring, but they were shooting each other. And yet they can still do that and it'd be absolutely fine. It's remarkable. But
because they're humans.
Yeah.
They're humans fighting for whatever they believe in, right? And then they found some commonality. Yeah, I mean, we all want connection. It's what humans, it's what's made us the number one species on the planet is our connection. There are massive studies that have been done in the 30s, in particular around the Depression, where babies were not getting physically connected to, and so they were dying. The attrition rate was about 80% in these state-run institutions. And what they worked out was if you just pick the baby up once or twice a day, it was inverted. Only 20% of the babies died instead of 80%. And so it was the physical connection. And there's a whole heap of neuroscience around this now where we are just an energetic field, an electromagnetic field. Yep. Your electromagnetic field meshes with mine and we feed off that. We're a transmitter and a receiver and we feed off that. If the electromagnetic field of the planet is nothing but chaos, then we feel stressed. Yet the beautiful part about this is that if I change my electromagnetic field to be peaceful, then those around me start to change because I'm now transmitting that. And there's studies on this where they have a group of 300 meditators, and they did this in Mexico City. 300 meditators went to Mexico City, sat in a park, and they meditated nonstop for 30 days. In that time, the crime rate dropped to nearly nothing. Fatal accidents went to zero. Right. So over the 30 days, all of these crime stats and everything went to basically massively reduced. As soon as they ended their meditation, it went straight back up.
Yeah. It's like the thing that, you know, I'm sure you and I and everyone that's been in any group of people, whether, you know, it's in a networking group or it's sort of somewhere and people always refer to the great vibe in the room or like the negative vibe in the room. And that's because, I mean, yeah, definitely. I'm 100% on the same page with that. Like I've always felt that's a real thing. There is like real energy in the room that, you know, forms a bigger bubble, you know, or it then, you know, expands. Like it seems to be, I think like, you know, in religious terminology, like as above, like so below, like things that you see in the universe, the way, you know, black holes and suns and everything works, like that same, it seems to be reflected, in my mind anyway, everywhere throughout the universe with how things grow, you know, things that expand in case other things with the same, either you want to say the same pattern or the same sort of energy or the same frequency or whatever terminology you want to use, it encases it. And then people understandably, they just say what they're feeling. They just go, well, it's great energy. It's because it is, but they don't then necessarily think it's like actual energy. But
But it is actual energy. It is all energy. Yeah. Right? That's all we are is energy.
Yeah. And that's the only thing that actually kind of makes sense anyway, because otherwise you would just be saying, well, there's great energy in the room and that's as a result of nothing, of, you know.
Of just some random idea
because everyone's smiling and everyone's looking at each other.
Yeah, or just happened into that energy. That's right.
But in business, people talk about a bad egg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'll talk about a bad egg and how that can impact a good culture, and it can. So you only need one person's energy to ruin a good culture. But also you can have one person's positive energy impact a negative culture or a difficult culture. Without, I don't want to judge it, but, you know, you can have you can be the one person, the Gandhi, right? Gandhi influenced the largest empire the world has ever seen to give him his country back. And he didn't do it violently. He just embarrassed them. And he didn't do it derogatively. He said, I love you. I understand why you want my country. I get it, but we want it back and we'll get it. And we're just going to stand here in passive resistance until you give it to us. And they did. That's astounding, you know. He, in his diary notes, he talks about if he'd met Hitler, he'd have stopped. He'd have been able to stop the Second World War. Now, to even write that and have the consciousness to be able to even say that out loud tells me that he could have done it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I'm sure that's...
Because his energy would have influenced.
That's absolutely true. Hitler's, yeah, just two people, just two people in a room. I'm conversely too. I heard a story recently about when Hitler was going down to convince Mussolini to not back out of the war. And he was so persuasive for whatever reason with his energy and himself.
Very charismatic.
Maybe a little bit crazy too. But he was there and convinced and like pulled the ear off Mussolini. Who, you know, and convinced him because he was like, "Nah, sorry, I'm out, dude. it's not working out really." But he went down there like personally with his crew and talked to them. But anyway, but look on your so am I correct in saying like when you use the term pilgrimage, that's your personal pilgrimage? Like for yourself.
A pilgrimage is a personal, it is an internal journey. So also I'm using the mechanism of walking as a method in which to connect internally. I use meditation, yoga, but in this instance, it's going to be a walk. And this is a specific pilgrimage because, you know, there is a history to this pilgrimage. It's been going on for 2,000 years, the Camino de Santiago. At the end in Santiago de Compostela, there's a cathedral there, and they believe the bones of St. James the Apostle, is interned there. So that's why it's been, that's why it is. It's not religious for me. I'm not I follow religions. I study them. I understand Buddhism. I understand Catholicism, all those sorts of things. But for me, it's about an internal journey. All of this is about internal. And when I understand myself better in the world, then I'm able to present better in the world or present in a way that is more connective, more influential. And as a consequence, and it's already starting to show, the responses of people reaching out to me, going, man, I'm inspired by what you're doing. Can I come and join you? I've got people that are making plans right now to come and see me in Italy in June, July. I've got all sorts of stuff, right? That's happening that I haven't spoken to some of these people in 3 years. Yeah. And yet it's all happening. And I didn't do it because I wanted to do that. That was never the intention. I'm doing this for my own personal reasons. I'm doing this because it's the next thing for me to do. And yet other people are going, man, they're being magnetized to it. They're coming towards it.
I think that was like, I think it's wonderful. I'm incredibly curious about it. You know, I think it's a great, like I love, to be honest, that's actually the core reason why I even started this podcast in the first place was to actually, one, because I love hearing people's stories, which is why it's, I guess, like even in our business, it's rewarding to help, but I like hearing about where people are going to, and if we can play like some little part, then that's really cool. Like that's awesome. You know, if we can play some little role in that, you know, and but then to see what actually happens, that's always been something that I really love. And the podcast, and you know, I'm speaking to you today, for you to take the time when you're just on the brink of going overseas is, you know, I feel, thank you for doing that, because I know you're probably.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I mean, you're probably like still got some things like to organize, but like as
a couple of things, mate. Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of things, but you're just going to go with the flow, aren't you, Gio?
We're just going with the flow, mate. You know? And if it doesn't get done, I'll be sitting on that plane, mate, and it won't have been done.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, look, if you don't get it done, it doesn't matter. All right. It doesn't matter. No, it will matter. No, but like it at the end, like since we're sort of nearing the end of the podcast, I just like I do with everyone on the podcast, I'll just ask you we've got some sort of, I guess, quote, but it doesn't have to be a quote from someone else. It can just be like something that you find really resonates with like this whole thing that you're doing. Something significant you want to share with everyone.
So I've got a parable actually that came to me. So it's a Chinese farmer. He's out in the paddock and a horse turns up in his paddock and he grabs it. And, you know, it's coming, it's a wild horse. He comes in, he pulls it into the barn, and his brother-in-law comes over from the next farm and he goes, "Oh, you got a new horse. That's good." He goes, "Well, it's not good. It's not bad. It just is." Right. So the next day, the son is riding the horse and he falls off the horse and he breaks his leg. And the brother-in-law comes over and goes, "Oh, your son's broken his leg. That's bad." He goes, "Well, it's not good. It's not bad. It just is." 2 days later, the Chinese army turn up and they're looking for conscripts for their army. And, of course, the son is of conscription age, but he's got a broken leg, and so they don't take him. His brother-in-law says, "Well, that's good." And he goes, "Well, it's not good. It's not bad. It just is." And in context to what we've been talking about today, Saul, was that whatever events turn up in your life, it's not good, it's not bad, it just is. And if I can use those events to understand myself more completely, to love and value myself more completely, then the energy that I will portray to the world and the influence that will come from that, one, I will feel, and this is the only reason why I do it, is that when I'm in this space, I just feel better, yeah? But when I then present, other people do get the opportunity to choose that as well. And so it's not good, it's not bad, it just is, my friend. That's the pilgrimage.
I love that. That's fantastic. That's a fantastic way to finish it off. And I'll just ask you to, if you want to let everybody know about, you know, I guess what you do, any website links, anything else you want to share, or if you're going to have like a travel blog, only kidding.
Definitely going to have a travel blog. So we're going to post through my socials. So Aurore Solutions, A-U-R-O-R-E Solutions. So if you find that on Insta and Facebook, so I'll be posting on that either video or written. LinkedIn, I'm associated with that. I've got a website. It needs a lot of updating, but it's got a bit of a basic to us. Yep. I help business owners by getting them to understand themselves, and through that then they get to you know, influence and lead their businesses in a way that's meaningful. And so, you know, we run processes with that, whether it be workshops or personal coaching. And I'm more than happy. And I am taking a 2-month sabbatical. So for, you know, the months of March and April, I will be walking and there'll be no talking, which will be very interesting for me. I'm not going to make 2 months without talking, but, you know.
But you might be talking.
But it'll be more walking.
Why anyway?
That's right. I'll be talking to people on the way, but I won't be coaching as such.
We'll still be talking.
And then in May, I'll be setting up in Sardinia, and I'll be running Australian clients, and I've got, you know, video conferencing setups now where I've got group sessions that'll be happening, and they'll all meet in the video conferencing side of things, and I'll be able to facilitate from that perspective. So if anybody's interested, then, you know, drop us a line, you know, either DM us through our personals or email me at geo@aurorasolutions.com.au.
Yeah, I think once again, thanks so much for your time, Gio. It's a fascinating journey in this current epoch of your life that you're going through. I'm sure, like I'm super curious to to follow and see how it's going, and I encourage everybody else to as well. You've got a really interesting, unique view on things, and thanks so much again.
And absolutely. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So with that in mind, that's actually it for today, guys. Thanks so much for listening into our podcast yet again. Before we go, please leave your feedback as well as any suggestions for any topics you would like to discuss in future episodes. And thanks again for listening to the Grow Your Business podcast. And we'll see you again soon. Bye, guys.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business podcast.